I'll just sit then. I can run in. Run on both. That's fine.
Okay. We ready to go?
Yes.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having us. So we appreciate the opportunity to be here. We like to, as a matter of our great partnership, come through every year and provide an update on the activity of CRDC for the year and a focus on our strategic initiatives. And part of that will be Brittany providing an update on our employment land study and how we're utilizing that as things continue to grow and grow rapidly here in Clark County and really maintain a balance of that significant employment land, but also land available for housing that provides people an affordable place to live and all of the space in between to get to and from work. So I appreciate Lindsay reaching out. I think she saw our presentation to the City of Vancouver right before Mike left. So just general update. We won't take the full hour. These generally take 15 minutes because it's a high-level overview, but if there's discussion or questions, we'd love to dive into that. And we'll get started. So just as the council's aware, there's been some changes this year. Mike Bomar, our president of 4.5 years, took a position with the Port of Vancouver. So in the interim, I am the keep the lights on guy. So it's an interim position up to 12 months. We are almost fully staffed again after Brittany was out on maternity leave and our former director of communications, Kimberly, left to go to WashDOT. We hired Monica, who's in the back there. She's our new director of communications. She joins us from Wagner Extrem, now known as We Communications, and was very involved with some large corporations there, including Microsoft, if I'm allowed to talk about that. But we're thrilled to have her. Monica is an excellent representation of the talent that Clark County can churn out. She's from La Center. She's a Skill Center grad and a Clark grad, a Penguin, and a Coug from WCU Vancouver. So manifestation that we're doing all the right things here and really value her joining the team. So the board, which Councillor Blom is on now, is working with me along with our kitchen cabinet to identify what the long-term business development role will look like for the organization, and we should probably have something moving and shaking there in about a month or so. So we're keeping the lights on now, moving those strategic initiatives forward, which is good, although there's not enough hours in the day anymore. So just a quick...
But you talk fast enough for all those hours.
Perfect. I try. And I'll try to slow it down. I'm always running. You know, over the course of 2 years, we hired Brittany in 2016. And she led the development and implementation of our new comprehensive countywide strategic economic development plan. This body was very involved in the development of that. So just as a kind of a, you know, quick overview of that, there's three major goals, which is expanding the existing base, focusing on those critical support services and networks for all the companies that currently exist here in Clark County, and they're starting to start and form, supporting people, looking at those critical education partnerships, pipelines, and making sure that we ensure a dynamic labor pool that's competitive in a regional and global market. And then the creation of place, which is the fun thing, which is how do we make this a really awesome place to be, amenities, transportation connectivity, and everything in between. So the vision and goal for that really is for Clark County to be recognized as one of the most inclusive, healthy, and amenity-rich communities in the country. As a result, and with a continued focus on growing a diverse base of community-minded employers, talent, both in and outside the region, we see greater opportunity here than anywhere else in the country. So we are really hitting the ground running with that. We've got a very large document that you've all seen. We're tracking key performance indicators and how we're moving that along with partners as well. As a staff of 7, we really rely on our education system, then the public sector, and also private sector to help us achieve many of those goals. So we're moving through that pretty quickly. I do see more and more yellow and red turning to green, which is good. We like to see that as we move through. Just a kind of a quick update on just the region. You know, a big focus for the CRDC over the last 5 years is really identifying how we collaborate and remain a good partner for the region. We're part of the Portland Vancouver Metropolitan Statistical Area, but we are our own defined community, but it does us a lot of good to collaborate together. So many of you know our partners at Greater Portland, Inc. I sit on their board. CRDC right now, as a function of that partnership, has a full-time board seat. So we're there at the table talking with employers, with the public sector partners across the river around our bi-state issues and making sure that we're doing everything that we can to remain competitive and also make sure that that narrative around the importance of a regional collaborative effort is really put out there to the public.
Yes. Speaking of that,
yes.
Before the recession, we spent a fair amount of money on land here, live here
in yes.
Portland. And that went away. Is there any talk about I don't know if we would use that name, but bringing that kind of concept back together?
So absolutely, it's a great question. I think Councillor Blom actually has a mug that he's using that's got our efforts now towards a regional branding campaign. So as part of our strategic plan, we worked with community partners looking at our individual cities in the county and looking at what's the baseline kind of branding and marketing message that we could develop and then really bring to other parts of the country and the world that identifies Clark County as being a unique place to Washington. And so the Your Journey Starts Here moniker was born out of that, and we launched that this January at our annual meeting. We're working with the Kamiskwashugal EDA and then all of our cities within Clark County to make sure that that branding aligns, similar to the Land Here, Live Here model, but it kind of rolls up to a cohesive brand.
Great.
So
thank you.
It's a lot of work, but and we'll be utilizing that during our Main Street Day coming up on July 13th as well. So, good question. And in addition to GPI, we work really closely at the state level with the Washington Economic Development Association, looking at the long-term outlook for the different regions of the state of Washington and also how the ADO network is supported and funded through the legislature. This body knows that we are on a contract on a biennial basis with the State Department of Commerce with very strict metrics, and as the funding situation at the state changes and is dynamic, we've just been a very strong advocate of making sure that we are well-funded and also operating as efficiently as possible and meeting those target requirements and reporting out all of the metrics that we're trying to accomplish. I'm on the executive board of that just by virtue of the work with CRDC, and we've been very active there. And Teresa Brum from the city is also part of that as well. So Southwest Washington has a really, really good regional representation at the state level. Do two things at once. And just a quick overview of the plan, it really, the focus has been establishing a 20-year vision as a launch pad for the long-term growth of our community that's sustainable and comprehensive. For this iteration, we're looking at a 5-year implementation plan to achieve the whole list of goals and objectives that are outlined in that plan. The process was very comprehensive, and you feel free to jump in on this as you led the process, but we engaged over 200 local partners during the 9-month planning process. And really try to get a document that aligns with all of the separate regional plans as well. One of the big effort was making sure that CRDC's plan is the county's plan and the community's plan. So working with the county, all of our education partners, the city, all of the cities as well. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, we'd just like to thank Julie again for her work as on our advisory board for the project, and the engagement functioned with Julie's critical help, as well as others, and it was a public-private partnership, as everything is with CRDC. But so we would work as staff, and then bring some work to the advisory board, and then the following week present out to our board. So it was a nice streamlined process for a year. So Julie engaged with us once a month and did lots of homework and preparation, among others. So the process was fantastic, and then that certainly helped with buy-in and has helped us with implementation as well.
So part of that plan was really looking at how does the CRDC and this community really get out ahead of our strategic industry sectors and provide some differentiation in the market around how we remain competitive and a compelling place, not just for people to live, but for business to expand and relocate. We went through a lot of data with this plan, location quotients, geography, international connectivity, a whole host of things. And that really, the data showed that based on existing clusters of industry, our education partners, existing workforce, that they're really a top 5 group of sectors that we should be spending our strategic and programmatic efforts on, both as staff and also with partners. And those, of course, you all know are software, computers, electronics, which is really a legacy industry here in Clark County. Clean technology, more focus on energy storage and transmission than generation. Metals and machinery, another legacy industry here, and the life sciences, which is one we continue to see a ton of activity around, not just because of the healthcare activity because of OHSU in Portland, but because some of our great business partners, ABSci, Cytodyne, and a few others are starting to tell the story of Clark County to external partners as well. And so from a cost of doing business perspective and access to talent, they're seeing a lot of benefit of being here. So it's been very, very helpful.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
As we look at these strategic sectors, and I know the CRDC is behind the implementation of the freight rail dependent uses bill.
Yeah.
How do we use this work that's been done and what we're looking to do with regard to freight rail dependent uses and try to make sure that we're not, you know, in two different silos or vacuums of, and that we're strategically looking at how do we maximize the opportunity that we have given the work that you that's been done here.
Absolutely. Do you want to jump
in first? Yeah, absolutely. So we'll, as Max said, get into the employment lands work later in the presentation. But so I sit on the Freight Rail Dependent Use Advisory Committee, or SAT, I suppose our formal work is done, as well as on the Railroad Advisory Board. And so I bring that work back to our Lands for Jobs Committee and provide that cycle of communication, essentially. And we're looking at these sectors and looking at what are their challenges and barriers to doing business in Clark County or establishing business. And you'll notice that these are, with the exception of software, these are large land dominating type. They require a lot of land and a lot of resources and a lot of infrastructure. So software we can envision in smaller office spaces and more of those downtown uses, but the remaining four really require that those large spaces. So continuing to communicate with those sectors in the form of identifying sector experts throughout the county. So we did a survey at the beginning of the calendar year to ask about some of those challenges and barriers, and asked about specifically about freight and about the amount of land that they would require to be able to establish or grow business here, what they would look for if they would like to move locations and expand their business, and also working with our business recruitment committee to make sure that those two groups are talking, to ensure that if we lose on a prospect, lose on a project, that we know why and can address that more formally.
And part of the reason I ask, and that right on with that, but part of the reason I ask is, as we look at a use table or permitted uses or conditionally permitted uses, I don't see any of these that would be really objectionable on the face to the neighbors. You know? And I'm just trying to, just in my own head, trying to work through how we manage through permitted uses along the rail, and how does that fit into, you know, what the strategic sectors are and what's really going to benefit our county in the long term?
Absolutely.
With and wages and jobs and talent base.
And that's exactly how we want this plan to be used, is how do we map the sort of the nascent opportunities with infrastructure and existing land with the strategic sectors and also the plan itself, and looking with the high impact uses. And to your point, none of these really seem offensive, and that's what we want to go for, is that if there's an opportunity to bring in a high-impact company that, that maps with this, that we have the opportunity to do that, and we can align that with the infrastructure. All right. Any more questions on that? So implementation and next steps. So we've got 5 years to execute on this. We're 9 months in now, 8 months in. And we're moving right along. You know, the education piece has moved very, very quickly. CRDC houses an education committee that's representative of virtually every school district in ESC 112 and the STEM network as well. And we're actually going to be launching a business internship packet. So when we've been going out and working with business directly, we've had nothing to provide to them in terms of how they map their priorities with internship opportunities, other educational partnerships, work-based learning, but really an intentional way to sort of build the workforce pipeline here. And that was a big outcome of the plan, and the STEM Network and Education Committee has really run with that that component. And so we'll be launching that later in the month of July. And the document itself is actually meant to be something that's living, and so you can break it into constituent parts and reformat it to the individual businesses. But to have industry buy-in from folks like SEH America and also on the public sector with Evergreen Public Schools on that best practice, on that partnership, has helped us build something that's replicable, and that's been a big need for us. So, you know, 5 years seems like a long time, but it's also a very short time. Soon we'll be a year into this. We will be providing to the board to an update on this towards the end of the year. But in terms of the key performance indicators and where we're going, I think we're essentially on track. Especially with such a big transition for the organization this year. So we're pretty happy that we're keeping things moving there. You know, the big thing for us is that we make sure this plan remains aligned and active with our regional partners, and that all of our staff work plans and committees really align with the public sector and private sector partners, not just in Clark County, but regionally as well. In our work with WIDA and also the State Department of Commerce and the Governor's Office, we consistently use the plan to point to in terms of these broader conversations around state and regional competitiveness. I had a 2.5 hour long conference call yesterday around new market aircraft manufacturing, and our strategic plan was a point of conversation during that, and how, you know, companies like Boeing and Lockheed really see a lot of opportunity both in the lands but also the type of people and workforce and supply chain that's offered down here. And that seeing an intentional buy-in and plan created by both the public and private sectors has a lot in terms of business competitiveness and what they look for in a place to be. So, so far, so good.
As we we can have a timeout as we look at our next growth plan, mm-hmm. which we'll hopefully we start to look at soon. So this is really our third plan, if you call this last one a plan, since we didn't ended up doing much. But I'm wondering, so when we do comp plans, the ones I've done, it's a little easier getting residential land extended because you have a buyer, you know, the end user right. saying, I need to move this urban growth boundary out, which is great, you know. But we don't have that in the commercial or industrial because you don't really have a buyer yet. Mm-hmm. So you just have to have somebody out there saying, we need more land for jobs, but right. we don't know who the buyer is. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, I'm glad Oliver's here, is that when we start thinking about this new comp plan, that we'd be more engaged with you and saying, we need this land.
Yeah.
And
please,
hold it
yeah.
for jobs. Don't do this.
Absolutely. And we've been talking about that as staff and also as a board. We just had our exec committee last week where we had this discussion, which is the CRDC really wants to be a utility for the county for this long-range planning to make sure that the land use decisions made tomorrow and 5 and 10 years down the road really align with the strategic plan, and that we can help create value by identifying sort of the target customer or target company profile for these larger plots of land. So as this planning continues, as we have conversations like freight rail dependent use, is that we can say we might not have an end user today, but this is our target audience and this is the data to back it up. So,
but I also understand that as we looked at the freight rail dependent uses, that CREDC already has a list of potential
yes.
Yep. company, real companies. Mm-hmm. We don't know their names because yeah. that's proprietary. Mm-hmm. But we know that people
yeah.
are waiting for mm-hmm. an opportunity and land to be able to do this.
Yes.
So we do have buyers
yeah.
in a sense. We don't have immediate buyers, but we certainly have opportunities for these companies. And I think we need to listen to that. And your work in gathering some mm-hmm. of that information as well.
Yeah, perfect. No, we appreciate that. And the big thing for us, too, and this has come up with the Railroad Advisory Board and also freight rail dependent use, is that people want to know, if we don't win a project, what's the profile and where did they go?
Mm-hmm.
And that's useful information as well. So mm-hmm. I think part of our freight rail dependent use involvement will be submitting a new memo similar to what was submitted to Railroad Advisory last year that provides an update on some of the projects and where they've gone. And that should provide some good insights as well.
Is that something you would share with the council?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a public document.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you mind just when you get that?
We were, yeah, planning to submit directly to you,
okay.
and then if you're
okay.
comfortable, yeah, to somebody.
I want to make sure it didn't go to them and not to us.
No, yeah, no, we get it to you. Yeah, we've
yeah.
had some individual folks, concerned citizens, reach out and request the information, and we don't compile direct reports for citizens, but certainly stuff that we provide to the county would be applicable to what they want to find. So.
Yeah.
And so you all know I'm a land use planner by trade, so or by practice, so please continue to use me as a resource, and I'm wearing a strategic hat, but my past work has been in land use planning, so I'll continue to help.
Very good. Yeah. Good time for you to be here.
Yeah.
And so we'll jump into some just annual highlights, too, of what the activity looks like by the numbers, the projects that the CRDC and our partners have worked on. As this body's well aware, things are really good. All of the economic engines seem to be firing on all cylinders right now. I'm a consummate pessimist, and so I think when things are good, everyone should be planning for when they're terrible. But I don't try to sing that song every day. But we've had more projects and more activity to work on than there are hours and minutes and the days and weeks the last 3.5 years. 2017 was one of our record years. We had 4 significant recruitment wins. On the business development and growth side, there was 15 physical company expansions. And these are just projects that CRDC and partners worked on directly. This isn't including things that just kind of go on by themselves. We hit 90 business visits for the year. So these are these unique business visits where we go out and talk about anything from workforce development needs, capital expansion, permitting issues, export, supply chain, but really that concierge white glove service that we provide to them. In our new updated ADO contract with the Department of Commerce, we've actually upped our threshold for business visits to 100 because we have the capacity to do that. As a committed state partner to this work, we want to make sure that as the legislature requests more and more data and more metrics around performance that we try to outperform our past year, year over year, just as a commitment to that work. So we're going to be at 100 for next year. We'll probably get to a year-to-date slide here next, but I can tell you that aggregating stuff today, we're at 80 business visits for the year already, and so we're going to blow through that ceiling. There's a lot of work to do there. People are not concerned, but they're moving money around, they're hiring people, they're reinvesting in the business, and so there's no end to things that could be done and services that could be provided, which is really good. Capital investment, last year was a record year. There was a lot of new construction projects, so aggregate approximately was $400 million. Monica did a great job of looking at the five-year average for us, and it was $695 million in capital investment from projects that Series C and partners worked on from 2013 to this year. So a lot of work happening there. And then just in 2017, over 500 new jobs projected, and those are full-time family wage jobs too. So really hitting those key target metrics there. And then sort of on the organization-specific side of things, 18 new investors supporting the mission of the CRDC, which is really, really good for us. Two highlights there, you know, everyone knows about RealWear. They're up and running here, moved from Milpitas, California last year, actually just talking to them this morning about ongoing fundraising needs. But we've seen a huge amount of success for them since being here. Not only have they integrated into the business community, but they've looked at how do they give back to sort of the social side of things in Clark County as well. And they've brought a very, very unique and dynamic supply chain with them that provides international exposure. So in terms of what we look for high-impact recruitment projects, a company like RealWear that's building a huge amount of intellectual capital, a novel hardware piece, and then an international network, that provides huge opportunity for us to continue to look downstream and see who else we can attract into the region that works directly with RealWear, but also find new opportunities for them as well.
They're going to start using some of their units on our inspectors.
Excellent. I'm glad that's coming together. They're excited about that.
I just wanted to comment. Sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
But I'm an alternate on the CREDC, and I had the opportunity when technology was kind of the focus for the entire committee and RealWear. There were several companies there, but RealWear was one of them. And I was just so encouraged, and it was just such a positive experience because every one of these companies spoke about, you know, Clark County being such a unique and special place. Here we are between Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington, and the RealWear guy particularly just loves this place, and it was just so encouraging to me, and if any of the council can periodically visit a CREDC meeting, I think it is very informative and encouraging, I think, for all of us.
Yeah. And it provides huge value. I mean, this council's been really, really involved and supportive of CREDC since I've been around, and that pays dividends, both just in terms of the ongoing day-to-day work that people find boring, but also on the strategic business development and recruitment work. When members of this body show up to support that business activity, it sends a very, very strong message. And I think also just represents a commitment to the business community that's open and dynamic, and that's a great thing to offer in terms of long-term relationship building, so we appreciate it. And then on the other side too, Home Depot, that's the next big one. This represents a really kind of unique business segment in terms of the metrics that we look for impact. People love what I call the shiny red ball, which is the high growth, cool recruitment project. But the data shows that the highest impact in terms of business growth and sustainable economic development is supporting the existing companies here and also the formation of new business. And so the Home Depot Quote Center started as a small fencing supply startup in Battleground. Nate Copper still lives in Battleground with his platoon of kids. I think he has 9 kids. But I ran into Nate at Fred Meyer's in Battleground when I was a kid. And so I've known of him for a long time. And basically took a supply business and found a way to integrate technology to hit a broader market and started chipping away at Home Depot's market share. Mm-hmm. And Home Depot said, well, this is kind of annoying to us. How about we just buy you? And Nate and the Home Depot went back and forth and ultimately landed on an agreement that allowed him to continue to build his company as a business unit of Home Depot, taking it from 6 people to now almost 100, and we'll be looking at 250 when they're in that space with potential to grow. So that sort of capital infusion exit licensing strategy is something that could be a critical component of our success long-term here in Clark County. We've seen more of that now with the Sunlight Supply sell to Scotts Miracle-Gro in partnership with Hawthorne as well. But from the startup perspective, this is a big win for us, and I think that a lot of this sort of kind of goes by the wayside through larger recruitment projects. But really, if you focus on putting really good people together to build a product in a company and can expose them to a market that allows them to be competitive, you never know what's going to happen. So this has been a really, really unique project for us. It took 3.5 years to pull together.
If I remember correctly, this was Project Orange.
It was Project Orange, yeah. The highly anticipated Project Orange that the Colombian could not figure out. And so really for us, I mean, the last 4.5 years has been focused on how do we aggregate and support the startup community, and how do we connect them with the resources to be successful, not just financial but mentorship and also exposure to markets that make them more and more competitive and also prevent JV and long-term licensing opportunities as well. It's a huge amount of work because when you work with startups, you have to be connected on a relationship basis so you build that level of trust. But once you're in the door, it's amazing what you can accomplish. So people love being here. We see more and more startup formation than we've ever seen before. There's folks talking about local investment funds, and 4.5 years ago, that was not happening. So that's actually a lot of fun for us, a lot of fun for me. All right. So this year, these numbers are already outdated for the most part. We've got 8 growth and expansion wins as of our executive committee last week. We've got 3 recruitment wins now. We're up to 8 new investors. And like I said, I think we're at 79 to 80 unique business visits for the year. So we're rocking and rolling, especially with the, you know, being down one person. So most of us are doing 2 jobs, and I think we're all getting sleep. Maybe not me. But really for us this year, and, you know, Counselor, to your point, we're looking at the new regional marketing coordination. How do we roll out a cohesive brand? And how do we make sure that there's buy-in from our individual communities so we can really present a unified front, whether it be with constituents here in the community or with folks outside the region, and as we do trade shows internationally as well. New marketing logo. Brittany is working on utility gap analysis with Clark PUD and Northwest Natural. I don't know if you want to touch on that. We've been doing a lot of talking.
We will on the next slide.
Okay. So that really for us, and we'll talk more about that, is looking at how do we unlock these employment lands and get them ready for projects as they come up, whether it be short-term or long-term, that we can respond to those needs. I mentioned the entrepreneurship ecosystem. There's so much happening there. We're getting closer and closer to a technology investment fund. We've been working with the governor's office and a few local folks in addition to some money from outside of the country to see how can we build an equity fund here that supports folks developing both software and hardware devices. And then education partnerships. I talked a lot about this at length already, but the buy-in from our education community to work alongside business to prepare students for jobs that are there today, tomorrow, and 20 years down the road has really taken off. Superintendent Steech, along with ESD 112, is now working on a decoupling initiative that will be proposed to the legislature as a priority for this coming year, but really focused on how do we create long-term career pathways that are available to all students, you know, depending upon where they want to go, and that we're broadening the discussion from college bound to college track. And so you can graduate high school, jump into a skilled trades, be successful, and if you have the interest to go to college or go on to get a technical education after that, you have the opportunity to do so. But see yourself doing that here in Clark County. That's the key. So I cannot say enough for education partners. They've shown up to the table for the last 4 years. I think that's a function of them being involved for the last 37 years. So that's turned out really well. And is a huge, exciting strategic topic for us. I think for this group, something that's going to be very interesting is you are huge partners on this employment land study as an update on that. And I'll turn it over to Brittany, and if I have anything to opine, I'll kind of jump in, but
perfect.
I'll let you drive from here.
Perfect, thanks. So, yes, we wanted to check back in on the employment land study. So I know we presented out a year plus ago, but wanted to let you know what we've been working on since then. So there's 4 things I'll leave you with today that we're actively working on, but I'm interested in your feedback too, and likewise what could be helpful for you, how we can continue to be a resource. So this is a recap of the study from 2016. The study looked, or was divided into 2 different phases. The first was to identify the inventory. So we don't know what we don't know. We had to find out where are our employment lands, what's the geographic distribution of them, and what's their development readiness. So we did come up with 56 total sites, and you can see where they're dispersed throughout the county. And likewise with their development readiness. So tier 1 is considered development ready within 6 months. It's almost there. It might need a simple infrastructure extension or something something within a shorter timeline to be fully development ready or is a greenfield ready site.
Is there an average acreage, parcel size or lots, you know, if you're looking at 15 or is it 20 acres?
Yeah, so we had a 20-acre minimum. The Portland Metro Regional study looked at 25-acre plus, but we wanted to capture that 20-acre site as well. Median, I would say, maybe in the 30s, yeah.
Like 35 to 45?
Yeah, certainly Lagler and Ackerland, those larger sites,
skewed it quite a bit.
But we did have several in that 20 to 25.
Now, Ackerland's, so this was inside the UGA, though, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and so Ackerland's inside the UGA? So I don't think it is.
We looked at both Lagler and Ackerland. Right. That was an exception
to the. Are they included in this?
Yes.
Yes, they are. They are included.
Even
in
though they're outside the.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We couldn't not include them.
What's that?
So we could not include them.
Right.
We had to. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But that provides it. Sorry. That presents a challenge that it's outside the UGA.
Correct. Right, yeah. So they'll. Yeah. Parcel. They were tier three, if I'm not mistaken, just given the complexities around that.
Yeah.
So we did have sites in all seven jurisdictions, mm-hmm. And a majority of the sites you can see are in that tier 2B development readiness. So that means that there is significant infrastructure that would be needed to be development ready. So now we're taking this information and working with our partners to determine how can we move those tier 2B into that tier 1? How can we present more development ready sites?
And that infrastructure, is that typically roads? Is it
typically
sewer,
roads,
water,
sewer and water extensions?
All typical
are
infrastructure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. PUD. Yeah.
Yeah. Some brownfield and wetland remediation, mm-hmm. things like that. But infrastructure was the predominant cost.
To the issues of land use, are all of these appropriately zoned or in an appropriate comp plan designation?
They are, yeah. We only looked at office and industrial zoned parcels. So this does not include commercial, any residential. They're all employment.
Mm-hmm. And what's the log for these various numbers and colors? What do they mean?
What do they mean? So the green are the tier one. So those are, those should be development ready within 6 months. The yellow are the tier 2B, so those take a little bit longer, looking up to 30 months. And those red sites need significant site improvements, mm-hmm. considered tier 3.
And so when this was completed last?
2016, November of 2016, so it's been some time.
So do we still have 15 tier 1 sites, or have you knocked those up?
I think we're down to 14.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that our Lands for Jobs Committee has been working on is anecdotally updating the inventory. We haven't done a formal update. We'll talk about that this year and determine when would be the next time to do a full revamp. But we've reached out to more and more property owners and have a better handle on some of these owners and have met with several of them. So they're now engaged with the project and want to ensure that their site is described.
Included in the
yeah, is included, and we have all the relevant information because this study, I should say, only looked at publicly available information. We didn't scope out to do interviews with property owners and things like that. So, but now that it's really catching fire, we're getting some of that input and are updating it incrementally.
When Fisher Investment come to Camas, mm-hmm. it was a really pretty field out there.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, all right, or us in the city said, yep, there'll be a road here someday, blah, blah. He took it and ran with it. Is he a rare exception then to visualize what's going to happen? So I'll take the risk of saying, I'm going to buy this. You'll build the road?
I would say yes, but I don't know. He's, yeah.
Well, I would say it's more of an exception than a standard, but it's a function of scale. For a firm like Fisher Investments that has the capital and the wherewithal to really jump in and say we can tackle some of these improvements that are necessary, yes, but we've seen in the last 2 years a number of large industrial advanced manufacturing projects from folks that have home offices internationally. There was one that had a market cap of $160 billion, and so we were talking about extending roads and putting in infrastructure, and I think we'd reached out to county staff and in concert with the city of Camas, and they basically said, we'll build roads and put in infrastructure if you just let us do it.
Okay.
So we see some of that throughout the year, but it's all about scale. Yeah. and how that fits into a business plan and a model for that site that they're looking at.
And do you see, if we're looking at these tier one sites, that one of the challenge being a business wants to come in, but that threshold of infrastructure improvement is just too
prohibitive.
Expensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've run into that a number of times this year, mm-hmm. yeah, especially on the power side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just as a sort of an anecdote, we were working with a company that might or might not have just done an IPO recently on their power needs, and for direct transmission service, which is what they feasibly need for their equipment that they've built in-house, it's $1 million a mile, mm-hmm. and so it's 20 miles, so it's just not going to work.
So I would say, along with that question, since we just had a good conversation with our state legislators, mm-hmm. and we're kind of talking about what can we do in a regional manner about getting some state incentives, is there a good opportunity for us and you to do that? Because, quite frankly, that there's no cash to build a road.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we can barely keep our own roads up. So
yeah. No, absolutely. We do work closely with RTC, and we work with our ports, and have worked with curb grants quite a bit.
Yeah.
So we're looking at those funding mechanisms. And speaking of funding mechanisms, we did, as a follow up to this study, write a white paper on, it was kind of a menu of options. I don't know if you remember this coming out last summer, right around this time. And we shared it with all of the jurisdictions that contributed to the study in terms of looking at what's the so what. So mm-hmm. now we have the inventory. Now we know we need to move mm-hmm. some of these tier 2B and tier 2 and tier 3s into a tier 1 status. So how can we get them there? What are some funding mechanisms at the federal level? What are other states doing as some best practices? How can we work together? And who would need to be the body to apply for some of these funds? So I can recirculate that as well, yeah. if you'd be interested.
Let's get the other 14 tier one sites filled up.
Agreed.
Here we go. So, okay, so the white paper is one thing we worked on. We're also trying to maintain the tier one sites. So, to Councilor Olson's point, we need to preserve them. We don't have very many, and we need to be strategic and thoughtful about them. So, as you know, CRDC has submitted a few letters of support / kind of letters of consideration or yeah. letters of...
Opinion.
Reminding the public how important it is to preserve these employment sites, and when you convert into residential or a different use, that means that you're pulling from that bottom line, and we need to be thoughtful about that. So we'd like to continue to do that. We've written 7 letters now, 3 of which have come to the county, mm-hmm. and our Lands for Jobs committee has been working on that. And we have some general policy language about preserving that land or creating it when it's available, when it's that's an opportunity. But we are customizing it and looking at, we're trying to be very thoughtful about adjacent uses and other conditions. And if it's not a site that would likely become an employment site, we recognize the system and we recognize that there are other needs for different land uses and are trying to be thoughtful about that.
So when you have a site like that, we've had several. Mm-hmm. Some of them you said, okay, it's okay for residential. Some we get the letter saying, no, this isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
But that homeowner, is saying, I got a guy, ready to write the check. So can we somehow say, all right, let's work with you a little bit, hold on your land a little more for jobs, and we'll work it harder for you to find somebody. So the homeowner, whoever owns that land, knows I'm not being left out
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, they're looking, they're trying to protect their family and their household.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
If they're, that's the kind of a quicker fix rather than that long-term
right.
vision. And so if we can provide that longer-term vision and longer-term emphasis of what the demand really is and what that patience might bring, we're glad to do that.
Okay. And we do get pinged by a number of families that, whether they've got a big parcel of land that nothing's happening on or a large parcel that's being, used for agricultural purposes. It's helpful, especially for the folks that see the long game, because they do stay engaged with us and, ask us about, who in the brokerage community should they be talking to. We've got one group in Ridgefield it's a family, and they've been very, very proactive in just checking in with us. And the dad is in Kenya, or he's on some sort of mission now in Africa, but he's actively trying to look for uses outside of the region that could be accommodated on that site.
But overall, we want to be here to make sure that we can provide a sort of a high-level overview of what's going to happen and sort of how their parcel might fit in.
So how do we... I'm wondering if we could do something like this, maybe not formal, but on a quarterly basis we meet and talk about kind
Certainly.
Of economic development, you know, the direction we're going and mm-hmm. how we continue to work together to make
yeah.
sure if we need to change zoning, if we need to, you know, make sure that lines of communication are open with planning and development and how
Great.
We just try to stay on the same page together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the county does have an open seat on our Lands for Jobs Committee for staff. So as soon as you'd like to fill that, let us know. but we'd love to have someone at the table there, and we're looking at how we make sure that the language is consistent, especially as we look at these continued requests for zone change, and that really does point back to not just the implement land study, but also the strategic plan, and that the CREC's language and priorities are the county's language and priorities. So there's consistency there.
We could also invite Helen Devery, our chair of Lands for Jobs, to join us next time. She
yeah.
works for Berger-ABAM, so she has that great technical expertise, but also that regional sure. perspective, and I think she would be of value as well.
Yeah.
Where we have that comp plan sort of overlapped on all of it.
Absolutely.
Yep. All in
yeah.
that mm-hmm. looks like.
One thing that you and I have talked about is in other jurisdictions, you have kind of a point of contact or a concierge. There's a big project like Project Orange that's going to require going through multiple departments for approval. My understanding is we don't currently have that kind of set up here at the county. Can you kind of talk about what that looks like in other jurisdictions and what are some ways we might be able to improve on that?
Certainly. So as a general best practice, you know, while working with our other local jurisdictions, cities, whether it be the port, is that we have a strong staff-to-staff relationship. And so on considerable or strategic projects, it's a point of contact from CREC and a point of contact from the jurisdiction of authority at that point to really provide an advocate through the process at all levels, so permitting considerations, financing considerations, anything else in between that they can't see as a business, the hurdles or things they're going to jump through on the inside. I would just point to the history of the CREC relationship with the county. When Mr. Swanson was here, he was a huge advocate and very involved, not just in the strategy and the ongoing leadership with CREC, but also here at the county. And so when we had critical projects, having a position like that really helped us shepherd things through all of the necessary processes and also kind of see things that we don't see not being internal county employees as well. But really on these high-impact projects, whether they be small and high impact or large in footprint and high impact, is that having an advocate with a public jurisdiction that is there to sort of build that bridge and sort of create that syntax is hugely important for us. And when we don't have that, it's where we can kind of see things get a little sideways, is that, we're doing a host of different things as CREC staff, but to have a partner that's an extension of us with a public sector partner is really, really helpful. Does that answer the question? I think it adds a lot of value. I mean, what we hear consistently, especially from RealWare, is that from the private business community to the public sector, to have these points of contact that understand what needs to happen is a huge competitive advantage. And also just makes them feel like they're wanted. And I think that that's a huge component of the work that we do, is that there's a white glove treatment to this. And if public sector partners are committed to making sure that things are happening sustainably, but do kind of reach out with a warm handshake, that goes a long way.
More Lands for Jobs updates, and then we can chat if there's any other questions. So we're also working with the greater Portland metro region to collaborate and to combine our employment sites. So there's now a larger regional discussion happening. And so we've shared the GIS data from our project and theirs so we can look at a regional broader distribution. And pleased to share that we have more sites in our inventory than the Portland metro side of the metro region. But that said, it's even more reason for us to protect those and to be thoughtful about them. So we'll continue to track those at a regional scale and then use that information as an input to regional projects, including the Economic Value Atlas coming out of Metro and some other work coming out of Greater Portland, Inc. So the data is being used, and it's been very helpful.
Does Greater Portland, Inc. have a position on the tolling schemes? Have they taken
Not
a
formally.
Position?
Not formally, no. No. We're all talking. Yeah. My hope is that between GPI, the CREC, the Chamber, and ICC, we can work together to align at least some position when the timing's right, and so that we've got a strategic vision together as regional partners, and it makes sense.
Hopefully, the decision or the regional decision is not, which something that I heard as a sidebar after our final meeting, and this was actually from a transportation person, that rather than stop at the bridge, maybe what we need to do is go to the intersection of 205 and I-5 in the Salmon Creek area so that we've got a big region and we can toll all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's not so disproportionate.
I have a question about
that. That does not sound good.
There's a lot of ideas out there that we keep hearing.
I have a question about Greater Portland as well.
Yeah.
So there, I was on CREDC about 5 or 6 years ago, and at that time we were just talking about engaging with Greater Portland. One of the concerns was that we share our information with them, and at the time we were also including information about who had contacted us, mm-hmm. or who we were specifically trying to recruit.
Yeah.
And there got to be a little concern about poaching.
Yep. Yep.
And so you're aware of that, and
absolutely.
So some matters need to remain
absolutely. Yeah, the relationship between GPI and CREDC is very positive in that we're very collaborative,
yes.
but we also understand the ground rules of what it means to operate as a connected region. And so we don't, the ground rules are we don't poach. We don't actively poach. If a company from Portland calls, we'll pick up the phone and work with them, but we're not actively going across and talking to the Daimlers and the Intels. And the same goes for them. They've really, their staff being new, Janet still being relatively new, you know, these teams, CRDC, GPI, kind of coalesce together at the same time. And so they have been a huge advocate for us in terms of marketing the region. And we've got really good lines of communication, and they understand the need for us to keep things quiet when we need to keep things quiet.
So if they take our clients, it's poaching. If we take theirs, it's recruitment. So I have another question. It is about this time each year, and I don't recall if it's annually or biennially. Department of Commerce mm-hmm. has money that's available that either Clark County can take it for economic development, or we can redirect that. We can request it be redirected to CREDC mm-hmm. as the development agency
yep.
here.
Yes.
Are we approaching the time that allocation is going to be made?
That allocation just occurred.
I believe it's typically they ask our approval of that in June.
Okay.
So I haven't seen it yet, but
so the,
we might be the, in between the,
yeah.
in the biennium.
It was just done.
Yep. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So in terms of our contract with the county, the funding has just occurred on an annual basis as a function of that contract.
Yes.
After the relationship was forged again with CRDC and the county a few years ago.
I see. Yeah.
So as long as we remain the designated ADO, Associate
yes.
Development Organization for the county, it just comes up on an annual basis.
Okay.
And if there's concern from on behalf of the council around performance or anything else with the contract, of course, we'd want to come talk to you about it. But we see ourselves as an extension of you, which is why that partnership is the way that it is. So.
Usually the letter circulates among the council,
yeah.
and we're just aware that we're going to continue.
The state, as a part of their business, generally sends out a letter for you to redesignate, and so
yes.
that may be happening soon. But that will come from the State Department of Commerce.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So if we had questions about specific dots on this map,
yeah.
Would we talk to you, Brooke?
Please.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
And if you've got ideas, we'd love to hear it too.
I've spent 17 years in the Phoenix metro area as a public executive. And before this job, I was in economic development with the municipality. So a couple observations. One is that some great things going on here in Clark County. The education system, the K-12, I think is just like, you know, national level good. And then with the WSU Vancouver mm-hmm. campus, that's just, the future
yeah.
is really good for that, and then with economic development around that. So those are great assets. A couple things. So as do these, and the council's heard these also, but I'll, these kind of my parting words. As everyone argues about tolls and what to do and how to improve transportation, in Phoenix, they're building it today.
Mm-hmm.
The infrastructure mm-hmm. is being built. And so I know this, you know, the folks here really can't change that, but just know that that's a major challenge in terms of competing against other West Coast metro areas that are competing for the same jobs and things. So for some reason, there's a very strong regional cooperation in Phoenix, and it may be just that they kind of view the world the same way. So just know that that's in terms of competing public infrastructure is really lagging here.
Yeah, it is.
And just the anecdote I tell is I've been here a year. I've neither been invited or attended a meeting in Oregon, which is, that's like shocking. When I was city manager in the Phoenix metro area, probably maybe, you know, a couple of months of kind of infrastructure, economic development related. So I'm talking more to this side of the
real estate.
Yes, I mean, there's, you just know that that's something that river is I think, a pretty big hindrance here. And how you solve it, just the cooperation and beyond just the economic development for professionals getting the electeds and the executives together on the public infrastructure piece. So then, and then the second side, which is Councillor Blum here, the startup support, just working for cities, they have very elaborate incubators, mm-hmm. publicly funded partnerships with the vocational technical institutions, the, you know, colleges, about, you know, loan assistance finance are very, very robust.
Yep.
And
we have
you're like, yeah, yes,
yes,
yeah. What else
tell,
is new?
Tell
I
me about
argued
it.
For this
tell
stuff.
Me about it.
Yeah. So this is, again, more for this side of the room in terms of that. That's in terms of a competitive market. The EDC is at a very disadvantage by not having that resource to support the city where I was city manager. I think they have a staff of 3 for business development, business startup. They have an incubator, and that's a city of about 120,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So much smaller than Clark County.
Yeah.
And every city in the region of Phoenix, the West Valley is where I'm from, has a, you know, Avondale has Gangplank. We have, in Surprise, we have an incubator. Goodyear has a business development center. Like, these are...
We, the CRDC, commissioned an entrepreneurship gap analysis right before I started in 2013, and it basically called out the need for an incubator. When we dived into the work, we realized that the infrastructure and support wasn't there to make it happen, and so we bootstrapped it with the advent of co-working space. And so for 2.5 years, we did the rounds with our real estate developers and with the right partners to say, can you create collaborative space that's a price point that allows startups to be in, has the right type of environment? And then also, can we deploy resources, whether it be programming, whether it be funding sessions and that type of thing? And so we've tried to tackle it from that perspective. But short of an incubator, I would support our public sector partners helping us get something like that off the ground.
I'm the budget guy here too, so I
money. It's the position.
But, right. Yes. No. But it's a need. It's a competitive advantage.
It's competitive. Just what the other metro areas are doing and how to be competitive. And the council has talked about that role of economic development in the council office coming very soon. In fact, I just remembered I was going to get that job already.
Just how many hours
do
you have? I got a day and a half to go. I was going to have that ready to launch when I left.
Yeah.
So that's been on their mind, too. So,
excellent.
But the EDC staff has always been super. I've known about it back from the days of Bob Levin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Some history there.
Yeah, Bob Levin and Bart Phillips. Oops. I knew. Yeah. I came from Port Angeles. So
okay.
I was there, and I saw Bart at Recon. You know,
mm-hmm.
Recon.
Yep.
I saw Bart at Recon. He's the Redmond.
One Redmond. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's been charged to make Redmond sexy.
Right. Okay.
He's giving it the college try.
Who did the Bellevue thing?
I don't know.
Who turned Bellevue from a bedroom community to an actual?
To a bunch of glass
skyscrapers.
So it's the EDC. I know that it has a rich tradition of really top-notch professionals and really good staff.
Appreciate
so
that.
Keep it going.
We're trying. Yeah. Thank you.
That's good.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
How do you work with Kellett Skamania?
Mm-hmm. We do. We collaborate with him as well.
I know it's, you know, I mean, Skamania is, you know, they do finally have some land,
yeah.
So
yes.
The more Skamania is better, that it helps us because.
Yeah. And we do collaborate closely with them, and so they'll reach out and let us know about new land opportunities, and if we have the opportunity to connect them with some strategic contacts, we try to do that. So we stay closely connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're our neighbors, and it's a beautiful part of the state too, so we want to make sure they're supported out there. Great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
Redid the formula, it is now, I feel like it's better than before. Before it was a little